In the old legends, like Thomas the Rhymer or Tamlin, the fairies are always luring mortals away. They fall in love with them and break their hearts and leave them alone and wandering on distant shores. Well, in Canadian writer Charles DeLint's fiction, fairies and humans, the modern and the magical, coexist. DeLint is credited with pioneering contemporary mythic fiction. In his 20 years of writing, he's published something like 50 books, and developed his own distinctive mythos of blended urban neighborhoods and fairy worlds. DeLint has just published a new novel called Widdershins. He and his wife, Marianne, recently stopped by the studios of Atlanta Public Broadcasting to talk with Anne Strangechamps, and to play some music and read some poetry.
Bushes and briar, thunder and fire. In the ceremony that is night, the concrete forest can be anywhere, any when. In the wail of a siren, rising up from the distance, I hear a heartbeat, a drumbeat, a dance beat. I hear chanting, eagle feather, crow's caw, coyote song, cat's paw, yah-ha-hey, hip-hop rapping, fiddle jig, drumbeat tapping. Once upon a time. I smell the sweet smoke of smudge sticks, of tobacco, of sweet grass on the corner where cultures collide and wisdoms meet. And in that moment of grace, where tails branch, bud to leaf, where moonlight mingles with streetlight, I see old spirits in new skins, bearing beadwork, carrying spare change and charms, walking dreams, walking large. They whisper to each other with the sound of talking drums, finger pads brushing taut hides. They whisper, their voices carrying, deliberately, like distant thunder, approaching bushes and briars.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's one of the hallmarks of your work, isn't it? This pulling of the magical fairy traditions into contemporary settings.
Yeah, it's the whole point for me. I like characters and I like story, but you know, we don't seem to have a whole lot of meaning in our lives. A lot of people are often searching for meaning. Luckily for them, they can find it in religion. A lot of people can't find it in that way. And if you think about how mythologies worked in the old days, there was all these heroes and
archetypes.
And what we have now to replace those are rock stars and actors and sports figures, and they all fall.
So they have very human feet of clay.
Exactly. Putting them down for that. I'm just saying that it's hard to find an ideal. You know, if you find, you know, if a sports figure is like really revered and then you find out he's been taking steroids and that's why he can do all these great feats he's doing, it's a letdown. So I guess what I'm doing is I'm trying to create some new mythologies.
First time I heard about the fairy courts, I was like anybody else, expecting castles and turrets and dainty little pennants fluttering high from the towers. There'd be fairy knights in spiffy armor, ladies in gowns, all that kind of thing. And maybe it's like that back in the old countries where they came from, but here they mostly go around dressed like humans and set up their courts and shopping malls and theaters, hotels and apartment buildings, all of it a step sideways from the human world. So humans can't see these courts, but to tell you the truth, there's nothing much to see. Fairies live pretty much like humans. The only difference is they don't look right. Oh, they seem human enough. It's just that everything about them is too much. They're too handsome, too beautiful, sometimes too ugly. Too tall or too short. And if they don't look human, then they kind of run the gamut from what they call the treekin, little creatures that look like they're made of twigs and leaves and the like, to shapeshifters like us.
Marianne, you've been part of Charles's writing life almost from the beginning. Do you have favorites of his magical creatures?
Charles has a pair of characters in more recent books called the Crow Girls. And I'm not alone in particularly loving the Crow Girls because they are both that mix of innocent and wild and crazy girls that can change from people into crows. And they do great deeds, but they can also be quite vicious when the situation calls for that.
Most of the time when you see them, they're just very sweet young women who are addicted to sugar. And then the postulation I have is that in the whole idea of when the world was created, they were actually there watching it being created. So they go back that far. If you can imagine the weight of all those millennium, if you carried that weight and that knowledge with you all the time, you would probably go mad. And so they just don't remember anything. They just kind of live in the now. But occasionally they do remember, like when they're confronted by some terrible thing, some injustice, they can sometimes remember again and become these fairly powerful totemic creatures. But most of the time they're just a couple sweet trickster girls.
Tell me about the new book, Widdershins. What happens in it?
Well, Widdershins is, just from the title alone, Widdershins means it's the way the earth turns as opposed to the way the sun turns. The sun turns day sol and the earth turns Widdershins, or counterclockwise. And in some of the fairy lore, if you walked three times backwards or Widdershins around, you know, a magical object like, say, an oak tree or a standing stone, on your third time through, you'd end up in fairyland.
There's a wonderful beginning when your character, Lizzie, she's just this musician kind of leaving a gig and driving through the countryside and has this, I guess you could call it a first encounter with a fairy creature, several fairy creatures.
She started to walk back to the car, then paused, realizing she was no longer alone. At first, she thought it was a huge deer standing behind her. Then she realized it was a man, or at least the shape of a man, dressed in tunic and trousers of some kind of light-colored cloth that made his skin appear to be very dark. On his shoulders, he wore a headdress of a deer's head, the tines of his antlers rising up into the starry sky like a smaller version of the elm at her back. When she saw the lips move, she realized it wasn't a mask. But for some reason, that didn't trouble her.
You've written that kind of first encounter scene many times, haven't you? They're always one of my favorite moments in your books, those first encounters.
Well, it's also the one moment you can't get away from, because there has to be a moment when they first meet, you know, when an ordinary person first comes into contact with something extraordinary. One of the things that I really love to explore is what happens when ordinary people do come into extraordinary circumstances. If you think about dramatic moments in your own life and how those things can carry on, and then think what would happen if you, you know, ran into a unicorn or a band of dwarves or something like this, or one of the animal people, somebody could shapeshift, it would really change everything for you. Everything you thought you knew about the world around you is suddenly suspect, and you have to reconsider everything, which is not a bad thing to do, actually, because it's a very good way, just in our own lives, it's a very good way to get out of the ruts that our minds fall into. You know, we all think that this is the way things go, and this is what's expected, and this is the kind of career choice I should have, and this is the sort of family life I should have, and then through whatever, and often it's creative arts, it will change people's minds, it'll change their perspective, and they will suddenly see, oh, there are other options.
There's a line in your new book, it's again about your character, Lizzie, right after she's met the fairy people for the first time, and I think you write, the world seemed to have weight to it. Everything seemed to have importance and meaning, and she felt connected to it. Is that part of how you think we'd feel if we had a more living mythology? Because you said earlier you felt that, you know, you were trying to kind of add myth back into the world.
Oh, that's definitely what it is. I was going to say to you that there's a great line in Colin Wilson's writing. He's a British writer, and he calls it absurd good news. It's when something extraordinary happens, and all of a sudden you see, because he believes that we all live our lives asleep. In other words, the absurd good news wakes you up, and it could be something as simple as a bird call you never heard before, and all of a sudden the world has changed and everything's new and different. But it's at that moment that you're trying to, you can't stay in that moment forever, unfortunately. I guess the Buddhas of the world can, but for most of us, it's just these moments that we get to keep, and it's a matter of remembering them and kind of living our lives so that we have the opportunity to have those moments.
I have to ask you about your own beliefs. I mean, you've been writing about fairies and unseen worlds for so many years. Is that part of your own personal belief system?
I utterly believe it when I'm writing the books, but I've never actually had those kind of experiences or encounters, unfortunately. I would love to have them. You know, I've met people who have had them, and they seem to.
And do you believe the people
really
who tell you that they've encountered fairies or other creatures?
Well, I certainly believe that they believe it. You know, it's no, I don't mean that in a facetious way. I just mean if someone tells you that they've had this extraordinary experience and you see a light shining in their eyes when they're telling you about it, I mean, I believe that they've had something. You know, it's just, I don't know what it is. My belief is that everything has a spirit and that we should sort of therefore be aware of that and be respectful of that.
What do you mean everything has a spirit?
I'm speaking of, you know, of the natural world. I'll walk in the woods sometimes and have these amazing, just these feelings of great peace or great awe. And then, but I'll also walk down a city street and I'll look down an alleyway and get this whole sense of mystery and difference as well. One of the things I do sort of believe is that things are the way they are because we've all agreed that's the way they are. And I think that when you meet mystics or you meet you know, the Buddhas and the people like that who have a different way of seeing, a different vision. I think that they're not seeing what we've all collectively agreed is there. They're seeing perhaps what is really there. And, you know, I'm just not at a level where I can see it as well with mm-hmm. them.
You're a musician as well as a writer. In fact, you started out to be a musician, didn't you?
That's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a musician, yeah. But I picked the wrong kind of music. It was
at the wrong time.
It's a great
time
music.
Now.
it was about 35 years ago, and it was Celtic music. And at that time, there was no World Beat. There was no Pogues. The Chieftains were around, but nobody knew or really cared who they were. And I was just ended up playing just in bars to drunks, and I got really tired of it.
No, you've never stopped playing music, though, right?
No, I've never stopped playing. It's just that we play, Mary and I play once a week at a local pub. We have friends that come and play with us, and it's very entertaining, very community-oriented.
Well, you guys brought your instruments in today. Is there something you've been playing lately that you'd be up for playing for us?
Sure.
Yeah. Charles has, I asked him to look into his own writings for some of his songs that have to do with spirit, and there's one that he wrote for our friend Terry Windling, who has a beautiful place in the Tucson area and just on the edge of the desert.
It's called Cherokee Girl.
Coyotes in the wash, you know he never gets stuck. He drives a battered old 57 pickup truck. Cherokee girl sitting right by side. She got straw gold hair, she gives a prayer to the sky. Singing hey-ya, hey-ya, hey-ya. Hey-ya, hey-ya, hey-ya. Up in the Rincon's back in some canyon, there's a mesquite fire and the people are gathering. Rattle, shake, rattlesnake, stick on drum, and the Cherokee girl lives and then her song, singing hey-ya, hey-ya, hey-ya. Hey-ya, hey-ya, hey-ya. There are four directions, only one creator. Call him what you want, you know it doesn't matter. There's only one thing you got to remember. Everything in this world is a brother or sister. Hey-ya, hey-ya, hey-ya. Hey-ya, hey-ya, hey-ya.
Roger Charles DeLint and his wife Marianne talking with Anne Strangechamps. DeLint has just published a new novel. It's called Widdershins.